All right, listener, we like to dig into a case that always seems to spark debate. People v. Superior Court do. This 1992 California case, it still has people talking about where the limit for probation are, especially when a firearm is part of the story.
Yeah, it really makes you think about where those lines are, you know, those gray areas. We're talking about a shopkeeper who ends up convicted of voluntary manslaughter after a fatal shooting, and usually that means no probation. But the court went a different way, and that's why Due is such a big deal in the legal world.
So before we get into all the legal stuff, can you kind of set the scene for us? What led to this landmark decision?
Okay, so picture Los Angeles, 1991. The city's still recovering from the Rodney King riots. Tensions are high. And we have Soon Ja Do, a Korean immigrant, running her family's liquor store. And it's important to remember that her son had been threatened by gang members not long before all this, adding to the tension that was already there.
And that's when 15-year-old Latasha Harlins comes into the store, right? What happened next?
Right, Harlins puts a bottle of orange juice in her backpack and Due thinks she's shoplifting, so she confronts her. Things escalate quickly and they end up in a physical fight.
So it sounds like this was more than just a misunderstanding. Was it a particularly violent altercation?
Oh, absolutely. There's a struggle. Harlins hits Due, throws a stool, but misses. And then Harlins puts the juice on the counter like she's going to pay for it. She turns to leave, and that's when Due grabs a gun from behind the counter and shoots Harlins in the back of the head.
That's awful. Was there anything unusual about the gun itself?
Well, there's this detail about the gun that becomes really important. It had been modified to make the trigger easier to pull. And this raises questions about Due's intent and how much force she actually used.
So we have this tragic death, a modified firearm, and a shopkeeper who says she doesn't remember firing the gun. What happened next?
Due is charged with first-degree murder at first, but it gets reduced later. She ends up convicted of voluntary manslaughter, and the jury finds that she personally used a firearm. And this is where the legal battle really kicks off.
Because using a firearm in a crime like this in California usually means no probation, right? Didn't California Penal Code 1203.06 come into play here?
Exactly. PC 1203.06 pretty much creates this presumption against probation for firearm offenses. However, and this is the heart of the case, there's this exception for what the law calls unusual cases, where probation might actually be better for justice. So the trial court had this tough decision to make.
So they're weighing the law, Soon Ja Do's background, and all the specifics of the shooting. What did they decide?
The trial court did something that a lot of people thought was unconventional. They gave Due a 10-year sentence, 6 for the manslaughter and 4 for the firearm attachment, but then they suspended the sentence and granted her probation.
Wow, that's a bold move. What was the district attorney's reaction?
The DA challenged the decision right away. They argued that granting probation just ignored PC 1203.06, especially since the jury found that Due used the firearm intentionally. They believed a prison sentence was the only option considering how serious the crime was. And that's how People v. Due ended up in the California Court of Appeal.
Interesting. So let's break down that appeal process. What were main arguments from each side?
Well, the DA was adamant that probation went against PC 1203.06 completely, especially with that jury finding that Due used the firearm on purpose. They felt the crime was so serious it had to mean prison time. Due's defense, though, argued that the trial court had really thought about those unusual circumstances mentioned in the law. They pointed to several mitigating factors that they thought supported probation.
You keep mentioning unusual circumstances. What exactly were those mitigating factors that made the trial court go this unusual route?
This is where it gets really interesting. See, the trial court acknowledged that Due's actions technically fit the criteria for denying probation, but they didn't think the usual assumption of criminal intent really applied here. They felt like just sending her to prison wouldn't be in the true spirit of the law.
So they're saying the law as written didn't really capture the whole picture of this particular case.
Exactly. They looked at the context Due legally owned the gun for protection because it was a high crime area. And remember, her son had been threatened recently. They also acknowledged how intense the provocation was during that fight with Harlins. And while that wasn't enough to throw out the manslaughter conviction, it was still a big factor.
So the court recognized the heightened emotions and stress around Due's actions. Wouldn't that go against the jury's finding that the shooting was intentional, though?
You're right. That's a great point. The Court of Appeal actually addressed that directly. They said that even though the trial court considered the provocation, they didn't ignore what the jury decided. Provocation can be a factor that lessens the blame, even if it doesn't change the crime itself.
I see. Provocation is key here. Were there any other factors the court looked at?
There were. The probation officer's report suggested that Due wasn't a danger to the public and probably wouldn't commit another crime. And remember, rehabilitation is a big goal of sentencing. Plus, they took into account her clean record and how she'd been a positive part of her community.
So basically, the court was saying prison wouldn't really help anyone in this specific case.
Exactly. They knew that Latasha Harlan's life was tragically lost, but they felt that putting Du in prison wouldn't bring her back or actually do any good for society in the long run.
Wow. It's amazing how many legal and ethical things were all tangled up in this case. So what was the final decision from the Court of Appeal?
They upheld the trial court's decision to grant probation. They stressed that their job wasn't to second-guess the trial court, but to figure out if the decision was reasonable and within the law. And they found what it was.
So it all really comes down to judicial discretion. The trial court could make this unusual decision, and the Court of Appeal chose to respect that power, even though it was controversial.
Exactly. People v. Du sets this important precedent for future cases. It shows that judges have the room to look at the details of each case, especially when there are unusual circumstances involved.
This case is a lot to think about, both legally and emotionally. But I feel like there's more to explore. I'm curious about what practical lessons this case holds for lawyers today.
I'd be happy to go into that. But first, I think it's important to consider the timing of all of this. Remember, this happened right after the Rodney King riots, so the court itself even mentioned how sensitive everything was around the case. You can't ignore the social context.
Absolutely. The racial dynamics definitely add another layer of complexity to an already difficult case.
And that's what makes Du so fascinating. It makes us think about how law, social context, and individual circumstances all come together.
With all that in mind, what lessons can lawyers learn from Du? What should they be thinking about when they face similar sentencing situations?
That's a great way to move into our next section. Let's get into the practical implications and lasting legacy of People v. Du.
Okay, so we're back and ready to really get into the impact and implications of People v. Du. You mentioned earlier that this case set a really important precedent. What are some key takeaways for lawyers, especially those who are dealing with sentencing and probation?
Well, People v. Du really emphasizes how important it is to have everything documented when you're arguing for those unusual circumstances that could justify probation. Remember all those mitigating factors we talked about, the provocation, Du experienced her clean record, the fact that she legally owned the gun for protection. All of that had to be presented to the court with solid evidence.
So you can't just say a case is unusual. You have to build a strong argument based on evidence to show why the typical rules shouldn't apply.
Exactly. And this case shows how important it is to know the specific rules, like Rule 413, for example, which outlines things that might reduce a defendant's culpability. Du gives us a real-life example of how to use rules like that effectively, even when there's a firearm involved.
It sounds like having a skilled appellate specialist on your team could really make a difference in these kinds of cases.
Having the right expert is definitely helpful, but beyond the legal strategy, Du also shows how powerful it can be to frame the narrative the right way. The court was definitely swayed by the portrayal of Du as this hardworking shopkeeper just trying to protect her business in a dangerous place.
So the facts alone aren't enough. It's about how you tie those facts to the bigger picture and tell a convincing story.
Right, and that's where things can get complicated. While Du shows that judicial discretion can lead to what seems like a just outcome, it also makes us think about whether bias might play a role in these decisions. Remember, this all happened right after the LA riots when racial tensions were really high.
Right, and we talked about how the court even acknowledged those heightened sensitivities around the case.
Exactly. So even though we can appreciate that the court was willing to look beyond just the words of the law, we also have to be aware of how pressures and biases from the outside world, even unconsciously, might be affecting the judicial process.
It's this balancing act between upholding the law and making sure the outcome is fair, and takes into account the specific circumstances of each case. So how has Du shaped sentencing practices since then? Has it had a lasting effect?
Du is still an important precedent, especially in firearm cases. It's been cited in tons of cases after it where courts have had to grapple with that unusual circumstances exception to the probation rule. But the legal landscape has changed, too. There have been updates to PC 1203.06, which make it even harder to get probation in these types of cases.
So the bar is even higher now than it was in 1992.
Oh, definitely. Courts now need even more specific reasons to justify granting probation. Du can still help guide legal strategy, but lawyers need to know what the updated standards are, and they have to be ready to build even stronger arguments for leniency.
So lawyers have to be extra careful about applying what they learn from Du. But what about those of us who aren't legal experts? What's the big takeaway from this case?
Well, People v. Du reminds us that the law isn't always so clear-cut. You know, there are gray areas and nuances and exceptions that let us take a more nuanced look at justice. This case highlights that constant tension between strict legal rules and wanting to be fair and to think about each person's individual situation.
It also shows how closely connected the law is to the social context. What's happening outside the courtroom can really affect legal decisions.
Absolutely. And that brings up some big questions. How much weight should a court give to unusual circumstances? What happens when those circumstances are influenced by social unrest or political pressure? These are complicated questions that Du keeps making us think about even today.
It really is a fascinating legal and ethical puzzle. Are there any other cases that might shed more light on this issue? Cases that lawyers should consider alongside Du?
People v. Warner is an interesting one to compare it to. In that case, probation was denied, even though there was provocations. Looking at both Du and Warner together can help lawyers understand the subtleties of how courts use those critical rules like Rule 413 and 414 in different situations.
So comparing and contrasting those cases, looking at the little differences in how the law is applied, can give us a deeper understanding.
Exactly. And it highlights that Du, even though it's a powerful precedent, isn't a guaranteed win. You need to really understand the whole legal landscape, and you have to be prepared to build a strong case using relevant precedents while also tailoring your strategy to the facts of your particular case.
It seems like People v. Du, even though it was decided back in 1992, is still a very active part of legal discussions. It's still influencing strategies and making people debate about justice and fairness.
Without a doubt. And that's what makes this deep dive so interesting. It reminds us that the law is always changing and adapting to what's going on in society. People v. Du is a perfect example of that process in action.
This has been a really thought-provoking conversation. Are there any other parts of Du that we haven't touched on yet, or any final thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with? It really has been fascinating. I'm especially interested in how the public reacted to this case, you know, with everything going on socially and politically at the time. What was the response to what the court decided?
Well, one thing about Du that people don't always talk about is how it affected the Korean-American community. Remember, this was just a few months after the LA riots, which started because of those police officers being acquitted in the Rodney King case.
And those riots really hit Korean-owned businesses hard, especially in South Central LA.
Right, exactly. So you have all this racial tension, economic hardship, and a feeling of injustice among many Korean-Americans. And then the Du case happens with a Korean defendant and a black victim, and it becomes this flashpoint. It just adds to this already tense situation.
It seems like the case became a symbol of these much bigger issues in society.
Absolutely. It wasn't just about the legal arguments anymore. It was about what was happening in society and politics about race and class and justice all mixed together in a city that was already so divided.
That's a powerful reminder that legal cases don't just exist on their own. They're always connected to all the complicated things happening in the real world.
Exactly. And for lawyers, that means understanding that a case isn't just about legal strategy. It's about seeing the bigger picture, the human stories, and how what they do might affect whole communities.
So Du reminds us that practicing law isn't just about knowing the rules, but also about really understanding the social context where those rules are being applied.
Definitely. Lawyers need to be aware of what's happening socially and politically because those things shape legal decisions, and they need to think about how their work might affect both individuals and communities.
This deep dive into People v. Du has been really eye-opening. It's taken us through legal precedents, ethical questions, and all the complex social dynamics that play a role in our justice system.
It's been a good reminder that the law is always changing and adapting in response to changes in society. And Du is a great example of how that happens.
We've covered a lot today, but what would you say is the most important thing for our listeners to take away from all of this? What should they remember about People v. Du?
I think the main takeaway is that Du shows us how much tension there can be between what the law says and what seems like true justice. It shows that even though legal rules give us a structure, they don't always account for the specific details of every situation.
And that judges have to use their discretion carefully to reach a just outcome, considering both the legal side and the human side of each case.
Exactly. Du reminds us that the law is constantly evolving and has to keep up with the complexities of our society. It highlights how important it is for lawyers to navigate those complexities, advocating for their clients, while always being mindful of the impact their work has on the world around them.
This deep dive into People v. Superior Court has been insightful and definitely made us think. We've just scratched the surface, but I hope our listeners have a better understanding of this landmark case and what it means for the legal world even today.
I hope it encourages them to keep learning and asking questions and to work towards a justice system that truly works for everyone.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep working towards a more just world.